Good evening, everyone. It's Matt Bubala with you here, Radio 720 WGN, the Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez show. Patty gets a night off tonight. She hoarded her vacation days all year long, and now she's spending them like a sailor on leave. Rob Martier's up in the newsroom. Esmeralda Leon has vacated Traffic Central. And Jasmine Cooper's behind the glass tonight hanging out with us. But Craig Collins is not too far away. We're actually going to jump on the phone with him after midnight to chat a little bit about the new Star Wars movie. Rob, I don't know. Are you into Star Wars at all, or is that just out of your
mind? No, I am. I mean, it's not. I don't go overboard with it, okay. But I'm certainly into the franchise.
And so you have not gone to see the new one yet?
Not yet. No. I'm going to wait for my twins to come into town for the Christmas break, and then I'll take them to see it.
Excellent.
Oh, have you seen it?
I did. We went. The whole family went. Opening night, Thursday
and
night.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Totally thumbs up.
Good.
Totally thumbs up. I mean, listen, if you're a fan of the show, I was 5 years old when the first one came out. So Star Wars has somehow been a part of my life my whole life, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
And the second set of three, I didn't love, although I liked them. There were parts that I loved about them, parts that I really did not like about them. And this one is, to me, the right blend of introducing new characters and paying homage to the old series and bringing back the old characters and weaving it all together. I thought it hit notes pretty pitch perfectly. I won't give away much here, especially since Rob hasn't seen it yet, but I think a lot of people, although a lot of people have seen it because that thing made a ridiculous amount of money over the weekend. And I think I read earlier today it's on track to break an all-time Monday box office record. Like today it should make more money than any other movies ever made on a Monday.
What did I see? $500 million worldwide for the opening weekend?
Yes. $500 million world. It's got to hit $2 billion, I think, to break Avatar's record.
Wow.
Which is crazy to think it did that much in opening weekend and it's still only a quarter of the way there.
Which, of course, would send Jim Cameron over the edge, but that's a different story.
Well, I'm sure James is figuring up something to try to get his crown back in case he loses it. But it's, you know what? I don't like that we even talk about it in those terms because inflation makes such a ridiculous difference.
Right.
And I think if you look at the non-adjusted inflation numbers, I believe Gone with the Wind might still be the all-time box office champ.
I mean, what was it, 50 cents for a ticket back then?
I don't remember because it wasn't around, but I'm sure it was not much. And I think 50 cents is actually, what year was that movie, 39, 33?
I'll have to look it up, somewhere thereabouts.
I don't think it was 50 cents a ticket. I think it was probably like 2 cents or 10 cents. I bet a nickel, something like that. Rob will get back to us on that. But we'll talk a lot Star Wars after midnight. We'll if you haven't seen it yet and intend to, we'll have a fun discussion on it without giving too much away. We'll give away a little bit, but nothing important when we talk about it after midnight. But right now, I want to talk about, and it's so funny, ESPN is on the monitor here. I think Justin had on the game to talk about the end of the game. And they're doing a huge thing about concussion right now. And I've been reading a lot about this today, and I'm interested in speaking with you at 312-981-7200. Would you let your kids play football? If your kids have grown, looking back now, do you wish you hadn't if you had? Or would you advise them not to let your grandkids or your own kids? Would you say, you know what, let's not have them play football? That's a bad idea. From everything I've read, I'm glad my children don't play football. Now, I played hockey growing up, and I had a few different concussions from hockey. But I don't think hockey compares to football. And Rob, you're a big hockey guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think hockey compares to football in that you are not going head on at each other the entire time. When I would get hit in hockey, generally, once in a while, you're headed one way and the other person's headed exactly the other way and it's a collision course. But that's rare. That's not how hockey's played because you're not trying to tackle somebody, you're trying to throw a hip into them, trying to throw a shoulder into them. But you're not trying to actually tackle them and bring them down. You're checking them along the boards. You're trying to hit them in open ice, but it's just not the same type of thing. You know, you can stop and go backwards in hockey. In football, you don't. You're trying to get the extra yard. You're trying to keep going forward.
Right.
So while there are blows that are sustained to your head, and I won't be surprised if they start finding some hockey players have CTE. And hockey players we know have retired because of concussions. Look at Eric Lindros, who was supposed to be the next Gretzky back in the 90s, and he, what, after like 6 or 8, Rob, concussions, ended up calling it a career.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to say just recently, within the last week or two, former Blackhawk, Steve Montador, who died, his family is suing the NHL because of what they say was repeated head trauma. And the, I guess, less than, how do I want to put it? The NHL basically wasn't forth. Basically, what's going on with the NFL?
It's now being alleged to the
correct,
NHL.
Correct. It's being
the
alleged.
Same way.
So. It's interesting. What research I've done on CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, basically suggests what you just said, Matty. It's the repeated hits, not the one knockout blow, but it's the repetition. So those guys who play in what we like to call the box, you know, your linemen, your linebackers, your running backs who are constantly being hit in the head, that's where it comes from.
Or Mike Pyle. Mike Pyle, who was a host after his playing career here on WGN when we had the Bears games in the Tribune today, it said, Mike Pyle, who died at 76 in July, was diagnosed with CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, the degenerative brain disease found in dozens of retired NFL players after they die, doctors announced today. The illness is believed to be caused by repetitive brain trauma. The diagnosis comes as the NFL faces increased scrutiny for its approach toward player safety. The number of dead former players whose brains have showed CTE symptoms continues to rise. And this week marks the release of the movie Concussion that chronicles the NFL's resistance to findings of CTE by pathologist Bennett Amoluo. The league is defending, I apologize, I think I just pronounced his name wrong. The league is fending off an appeal of the $1 billion settlement between the NFL and more than 4,400 retired NFL players who allege the league ignored players' cognitive problems resulting from playing football. The agreement, and I didn't know this about the agreement. I knew they'd come to an agreement and there was a settlement. The agreement stands to cover more than 20,000 NFL retirees for the next 65 years. But critics such as Mike Pyle's daughter take issue with how payments are related to CTE diagnoses of after April 2015. Those are excluded. That was when the judge overseeing the case signed off on the settlement. It was done partly to discourage suicides, because several former NFL players, including former Bears safety Dave Duerson, had taken their own lives and were later diagnosed with CTE. The CTE Center has discovered symptoms of CTE in 88 of 92 former professional football players' brains it has tested, and 144 of 179 players at all levels. See, it's interesting because it sounds like in that settlement, they excluded anybody diagnosed after April 2015 because, in general, the only way to diagnose CTE is by looking at the brain, dissecting the actual brain, which means it's not going to happen until after somebody has passed away. And the concern was people are going to keep committing suicide to prove, or maybe, you know, they get so depressive. I mean, these guys were so depressed they were committing suicide, yet they purposely didn't do it by damaging their brain because they wanted to donate the brain. So that's an interesting psychological analysis, I think, could be had of what's going into the thought of taking your own life, yet doing it in such a way where it's not such a moment of despair that you're not just doing it. However, you're actually planning this out in that way. But they wanted to discourage that. At least that's what they're talking, that they wanted to discourage that. But now the Pyle family is saying, you know, that then harms if we're divvying out the money differently based on everybody after that who did have CTE, and we're not going to find out till after they pass away, hopefully after a long, fruitful life. Shouldn't be that way. Katie Couric interviewed some people for Yahoo News about the new Will Smith film Concussion. The film highlights the case of NFL Hall of Famer Mike Webster, who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers and died of a heart attack at age 50. Upon examination of his brain, they discovered that he suffered from the degenerative brain condition. We always knew you could have concussions and it could affect your career, maybe be career ending, according to Dr. Julian Bales, a former team physician for the Steelers. But what was not obvious and what we did not know until the Mike Webster case was published was that it is possible to have brain injury and maybe not even known concussions, and then later in life have neurological or dementia problems. That was a sea change. But it's not just football players who can contract CTE. It happens in boxing. It happens in ice hockey, wrestling. It can happen in baseball. It's happened in soccer. In a recent New York Times op-ed, Amoluo said, the risk of developing brain injury from high-impact contact sports is so great that young children should not even be allowed to play. Quote, we should at least wait for our children to grow up, be provided with the information and education on the risk of play, and let them make their own decisions, he wrote. In May, Adrian Robinson, a former NFL linebacker, committed suicide at age 25 and was later found to have had CTE. His parents said they weren't aware of the severe consequences from the multiple concussions he sustained while playing in the league. The NFL says it has implemented numerous changes to enhance the safety of all players, including nearly 40 rule changes in the past decade, strict concussion protocol, and better training and sideline medical care. The league also points to a 34% decrease in concussions in NFL games since the 2012 season. Terry Robinson, Adrian Robinson's mother, says the NFL must do what's right. Quote, they have to put the safety of the players first because this isn't something that's going to go away for them. That last quote to me is interesting. The mom saying, listen, the league has to do what's right. They have to put the player safety first. I don't know how they do that. I don't know how they can make football safe. I don't think they can. It's a different game than it was 40 years ago. I mean, if you look at Mike Pyle's era, Mike Ditka's era, look at how big those guys actually were compared to everybody in the league now. These guys are so much bigger, so much stronger, have so much more weight. They're running harder, faster than ever before. They're attacking with their heads. Even though they talk a lot about training properly now, and maybe it was more 70s, 80s that players were just spearing each other and going head first. You still see, I mean, look at you and Justin were just talking about what Odell Beckham did to that guy last night. And in this Katie Couric piece, they were showing youth football and just kids hitting each other. And even if they're being trained the right way, even if they're tackling, leading with their shoulder, all these things, head-to-head contact is going to happen just because you're moving fast and you can't always move. A lot of these penalties we see in the NFL today, the flags that are thrown for head-to-head contact, I think oftentimes you'll hear the announcer saying, it's tough when you're going that fast. The other person, it's not a stationary target you're going at and you can always just lead with your shoulder and right there. That other person is always moving too. And a lot of times they're putting their head down at the last second. So that contact is going to happen. As much as they work to try to avoid it, sometimes it's going to happen. And even if they always avoid the head-to-head contact, if you're running 15 miles an hour one way, and I'm running 15 miles an hour the other way, and I hit you in the chest with my shoulder, your head is still going to snap back. And it's not always the landing. It's the splashing of that brain in the liquid in your skull. I think, to me, has almost as big of an impact. If you're doing that 25 times a game, maybe you don't need one slam to the turf or slam from another helmet to your head. Maybe that's going to take its toll. And when we start seeing, and I wonder if we will, I have a very good friend who only played up to high school, played through his high school career. He was a quarterback. And those aren't guys that are getting slammed every play. They're getting slammed sometimes really bad. I guess it depends on the guys in front of him. But he had multiple concussions in high school. And he has terrible migraines. Often. Once or twice a week, sometimes not for a month. Too often, I'm hearing him talking about, I was up all night, I got this migraine, it was killing me. And maybe he just is a guy who gets migraines. Maybe it has nothing to do with anything. But I worry for people like that and for kids who start playing at 5 or 6 years old. And unfortunately, the culture we're in now, right? Kids aren't, when I went to Mount Carmel High School back in 86 through 90, there were kids playing freshman football who'd never played football before. I bet that's incredibly rare now. Most kids are starting in their young leagues, 5, 6, 7 years old, tackle football. What kind of toll is that going to take on those kids as they get older and older and older? Now, hopefully because they're teaching them right now and they're really careful about that, and as soon as they get hit hard, they're getting out of the game and all those things. I hope to God that's going to make a difference, but I don't know if it is. I want to talk to you more about it. 312-981-7200. Would you let your kids now join a football league? If they wanted to sign up, said, Mom, Dad, God, I really love to play football. I want to go hit somebody. Let me go. Let me get out there. I'll be safe. It's fine. With what we know now, with all that you've read, do you think, yeah, maybe we're hearing, because sometimes, let's face it, in life, sometimes we start hearing about things and we go crazy about them. Do you think that football is safe for kids to play? 312-981-7200. Matt in for Patty here on 720 WGN. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez, but Patty is away, so Matt's here playing. Matt Bubala in for you for Patty tonight here on 720 WGN. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile. We're talking about concussion and CTE and whether or not you would let your kids play. 312-981-7200 is the number. And one quick text here before we get to Barbara on the phone. My son begged to play football in high school. I forbid it. I had a friend who was a lawyer. She let me show him a case where a 16-year-old was paralyzed for life from a football injury. It didn't faze him, but I stuck to my guns. He ended up playing baseball through college. He had no breaks, sprains, or injuries. He has graduated healthy and still has a great arm. He played every game. He still resents me for that decision, but I think I made the right choice. He says if he has sons, they will all play football, but we shall see. What would you let your kids do, football or not? 312-981-7200. Barbara's on the phone. Barbara, good morning. You're on 720 WGN. I guess it's still good night. Good night, Barbara. How are you?
I'm good. It's a great topic, Matt.
Now, it's a scary one, I think.
Yeah, it's a very, if you're a parent or a friend of a teenager, it is. It doesn't just pertain to football, though. I have a young niece who's now a freshman at Missouri, and she played basketball her freshman and sophomore year.
Mm-hmm.
She got charged. She's a tiny little girl. She got charged by a girl and got a two concussions. The second one was very bad.
Mm.
She is still seeing a vestibular neurologist. In high school, she had to take her finals a semester later because she couldn't concentrate to take them. She gets terrible, terrible headaches. And if this can happen to a young girl, when you're getting the hitting in football, it's even more major.
Yeah, it's interesting. Although I would say if you get knocked over in basketball and slam your head on that floor, I think that can be pretty major. Maybe as major as anything.
She was out. It took her a couple minutes to come to.
Wow, that's frightening. And did she stop playing basketball after the second concussion?
Oh, yeah. Her parents said, oh, no, no way.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. That's scary. And I know concussion, basketball does have some concussions because of things like that, because the elbows flying and that hard floor that they tend to hit when they're jumping and flying all over and diving for loose balls. I still think it's probably relatively rare compared to what is going on in football. Not concussions themselves, because maybe those don't happen all the time in football, but think about it. In basketball, not on every play is somebody trying to drive her into the ground. You know what I mean? When she sets a pick,
exactly.
When something like that happens, that can happen. But the goal of football is somebody has a ball, let's go kill that person. And you're not trying to hurt them, you're not trying to hurt their head, but that's a natural occurrence because of two bodies going as fast as they can at each other. It's just an inherently dangerous thing.
I mean, just take a look at all the former Bears that you come up with that have problems from concussions. Jim McMahon, Dave Duerson, and you can go on and on and on.
Yeah, and it's
Mike
interesting.
Pyle.
It's interesting. Yeah, Mike Pyle was just announced today that he had CTE. So a texter, I think it was Tim and Addison earlier, said, you know, until we see, why is it that like Mike Ditka seems fine? Why does Mike Singletary seem fine? Jim Harbaugh. There's a lot of other ex-Bears, Tommy Waddle, that go through their life that we've seen and known, Glenn Kozlowski, Dan Hampton. Now, maybe these guys are suffering in some way. Maybe they're not. I don't know. But that's the question that comes up is, and then people are going to say, well, we just don't know enough. Why are some guys okay and some aren't? What are the underlying factors here? But for me, I don't need to know all that. All I know is it seems really dangerous, and I'm hearing a lot about people with concussions, and this is affecting them throughout their life. This isn't just, yeah, I had trouble playing that year. If it's going to affect my child in their 40s and 50s because of a decision I made to let them go pursue this, that scares me. Now, most people aren't going to go play pro football. Most people, it's not a true concern. Some more people than that are going to play college football. And there was a study that said college football kids are taking pretty strong blows to their head about 300 times over 4 years. If you can avoid those 300 times, I don't know if our kid's going to be better off or not, but why take the chance? And it's crazy because I love football. I love watching football. I'm betting on football. I'm checking my fantasy team. I'm not addicted to it, but I like it. I enjoy it. It's fun on a Sunday afternoon to cheer on the Bears and have something to do and do Super Bowl squares and all those things. We have a big party every year for the Super Bowl. I enjoy it. I would never let my kids play it, though. And for a lot of the colleges, I love watching the Northwestern Wildcat games. I'm all excited they're going to a bowl. And these colleges pay for most of their other sports. The big ones that have big football programs pay pretty much for all the other sports by the money they make with football. So oh, yeah. It would be
listen, man, I'll let you
crazy.
Talk on, and thanks for the let me put in a few words
you
here.
Bet, Barbara. Thank you so much. Have a great night. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think we know enough for you to say, nah, my kids aren't going to play football? I think people that grow up in football families, the adults are like, hey, I'm fine. It's, you know, it's a rare occurrence still. And I understand that. There's a lot of great things that come out of team sports, the character building, the toughening. Football's a complex game. There's a lot to learn. It's not just running and hitting people. You're running complex plays. I think it's a great thing, except for this very dangerous part of it. 630 writes, when my son was born, I told everyone I don't want him to play football. Another 630 says, put the leather helmet back on so they won't hit as hard. I still don't think, I know that would make a difference. Maybe we talk about rugby and you look at rugby players. I bet if they studied rugby players, there would be issues there too. That's my guess. 262 writes, I believe if children want to play the sport, that would be their decision. If you want to prevent injury, take away the armor. We pad them so well. The pads are so well designed today that the kids do not feel the impact. Brain injury is created not because of the fall, it's the helmet. It's because the brain, if the texting I can't understand, but because of the brain itself, not because of the helmet, because of the brain getting shook around. But the brain's going to get shook around no matter what you do. And I don't know that the pads are so good that they're not feeling it. I'm imagining if you have a concussion, you're still feeling it, no matter how padded your helmet was. Esmeralda, if you had a young boy at home who was 9 or 10 years old and said, Mom, oh, we got to play some football. I want to strap them on. It's so much fun tackling my friends.
No.
Never let him do it?
No. I was a very non-activity child.
Okay.
But if they wanted to, I couldn't, no, because it's too much. There's a lot of other sports that they can do that isn't that rough.
Is that the only sport you wouldn't let them play? What if they said, how about hockey? How about wrestling? How about boxing?
Boxing's a bit much as well. I think, you know what, it's a 10-year-olds, I don't know about. I mean, maybe once you get older,
mm-hmm.
15, 16, because you're a little more, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
But when you're 10, it's like, no, I'm still the parent. I'm going to tell you what to do.
That's the funny part is, like, that makes sense. You know, let's let them get a little older. Let's see how they are. Let's see what their temperament is. Do I think they could handle this? Are they going to be smart enough to speak up if they're hurt? But it's the way we're going with our culture of sports is our kids can't wait till they're 15 to start playing football. Those kids have been playing for 8 years already. You got to play a sport year round now. You got to get on a travel team. You got to keep playing and working. You got to start working out. Our kids play baseball year round. They play hockey year round. They play basketball year round. There's no season for a particular sport anymore. You join that sport, you give up all the others. Not everybody does it that way, but too often that's the way we've allowed things to slide. That's just how it works. You pick a sport and you got to stick with it. There's a lot of pressure to keep playing year round those particular sports, which not only leads to a lot of kids who maybe would be great at some things never playing them, it leads to a lot of repetitive injuries. And while everybody I know that plays football starts up in August and they end around November, I don't know any of my kids' friends who play football playing in the spring or anything like that. If we ever get to that, that's going to be another call of, oh boy, what are we doing here? And I wonder, you know, all the friends that we have that who played football 3 years ago, their kids are still playing football now. I don't know of anybody that said, hey, this is not for us. I think if they're playing, the family's into it and they're playing. But I imagine that the league numbers have had to have been affected by how this is working out and how much noise is being brought to these issues. Mike's on 720 WGN. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Good. How are you, Nate?
I'm doing great. What about you and your kids?
Well, I'm 72. I used to go to Bear games at Wrigley Field, and one of my Bears, Ed Sprinkle, passed away, and I noticed, dementia, and we keep seeing this. So I've given up football. I don't go to see my grandson play. He loves the game, and I think he's going to give it up just on what he's reading. He's 12 years old. But for me, NFL means no frontal lobe. I try to think of that. And on Sundays, I've given it up. I don't miss it very honestly because I think it takes advantage of our youth. It's really find something better to use your time. I don't know, mentor somebody, get involved in your community. We need a lot of help. I'm a principal up here, and you know, kids don't have the capacity to make that decision. We're such a macho culture. So my feeling is, in the NFL, no frontal lobe, ultimately. We're putting our kids at risk. Our culture seems to, I don't know how we'll break the habit, but we've got to do this one by one.
That's interesting, Mike. So not only are you not wanting your grandson to play, even though he is playing, you won't go watch him play, and you don't watch the NFL games anymore on TV.
No, I've given up, and it's not because the Bears are so lousy, and I'm up in Wisconsin, and it's just people, I think, we need something better to do with our time on Sunday. I know what that is. Read something. Get involved in your community. Write a letter to the editor. But we're just seduced by this game.
Well, it's a fun game to watch. I mean, I think it is fun, but and I enjoy watching it, but I hate what's happening to the people who are playing it. I do hate that, but it's interesting. I interviewed a guy here on WGN a year or two ago, a sports guy who wrote a piece saying, I'm boycotting the Super Bowl. I'm not going to watch it because I'm doing is supporting the idea of these people beating their skulls together and damaging themselves long term. And that's kind of the stance you're taking.
Yeah. They're being used, I think, by the colleges. And, you know, I love sports. I played a little football. And sadly, I played hockey, which I love just as much, and I haven't given up the Blackhawks. So I guess I'm kind of being a fool here because you can hurt just as much in hockey. Although I think with the ice, you slide a little bit. There's not the concussion that there is in football. Anyway, it's a tough question, but as a culture, we got to move beyond it. And,
So your grandson plays. Have you talked? So is that your son's son or your daughter's son?
Yeah, I've talked to my son.
So your son's son plays. Have you said to your son, I don't think he should be playing football?
I've told him I'm concerned. And my son, this was last year, said, well, he can't give it up. He loves it. But the young man is now, he's very bright and he's reading a lot. I'll send him articles from New York Times on some powerful stories. And he said he's not going to play next year.
Mm.
But I'm going to tell you, very honestly, he's going to play hockey. He loves hockey.
Yeah.
So,
well,
I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but
I don't know that you completely are, Mike. I grew up playing hockey, and I just don't think it's exactly the same. I mean, I do think there is a head trauma danger in hockey. There absolutely is that you have to be careful with. But it's not every play lining up to go butt heads with somebody. It's glancing blows, and it's just not as often a part of the game. Although we cheer like crazy when we see Brian Bickle throw somebody hard into the boards. It's part of the game.
You're right.
And we love it. So you're right. It is a little contradictory, but I don't think it's quite on the same level. Mike, I really appreciate the call. Have a great night. Thank you so much for checking in with us. 312-981-7200 is the number. 331 writes, my kid is an unruly 4-year-old. I know those kids. I've had a few of those. He runs around and loves playing rough. He runs head first and hits his head, headbutt sometimes. I always stop him when it gets to this point. Football is out of the question. 630 says, have your buddy with him. He's recommending a product for migraine people. All right. I will pass that along. Thank you, Daryl. 224 writes, I believe these kids have gotten so much bigger, stronger, aggressive, and competitive over the decades. And I think that is a huge part of it. These people are. Think about the fridge. Back when the Bears won the Super Bowl and how big the fridge was. Maybe not height-wise, but weight-wise. He was thought to be just this huge monster. He would be small on any team today. These guys are bigger, stronger, training year-round, going at each other so hard all the time. You got to think that takes a toll. 312-981-7200. Matt in for Patty on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Patty Vasquez here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number. Mary, you're on 720 WGN. What do you think about all this?
I'm one of 16 children, and we were all sports. My father was a college basketball team,
mm-hmm.
and I have three adult sons who played Division I sports, 2 soccer, and 1 football. And I think it's every sport that you just have to play intelligently. I do believe there is no off season anymore. mm-hmm. which my dad, as a college basketball coach, always encouraged other sports because Good. Otherwise it's overuser syndrome
yeah,
where
absolutely.
You just burn out.
And my, or the repetitive use injuries, too, that can happen.
That's all, and my son, who played football at Northern, owns his own gym where he trains athletes to play correctly and hit, you know, correctly and strengthen whatever. But the other thing, too, is you have to take everything away is my nephew used to get concussions, they said, from jumping on a trampoline, the constant jumping in the brain mm-hmm. shaking.
Interesting.
So,
interesting.
Right.
Well, okay, so if concussions happen from that and that's dangerous, you say right. you have to play smart, Mary. How can you play football smart? Think about what we're talking about, running ahead, somebody's tackling you, trying to throw you to the ground. You can lead with your shoulder. You can do all sorts of things, but there's only so much you can do in a sport like football to avoid your head being shaken around a bit, right?
I totally agree, and I have two nephews, one right now playing hockey at the University of Minnesota and at Duluth, and the other one, or Minnesota Duluth, and the other one Wisconsin-Madison. And they've had some injuries, too, you know what I mean? So
sure.
if you have to play, you know, like Connor always said, you hit them before they hit you, and you control the hit. Just even in soccer, my two yeah. sons that played Division I soccer, you're heading that ball. You know, that's an injury in itself as
yeah,
well.
No
so.
Kidding. Mary, thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate it. Keith, you're the last comment on this. Keith, you're on 720 WGN.
Yes, I'm 63 years old. And, you know, we used to play tackle football on the corner lots as kids. And none of us ever had concussions. And that's with no help.
Keith,
and we were doing it every day.
Keith, would you have known back then if you had a concussion? Because mom and dad weren't running and taking us all to the hospital back in the day when we were playing on the corner
no,
lot.
But mom and dad was intelligent enough to see the sign of something is wrong with you. Something is wrong with you. We all graduated from high school with honor.
Yeah.
We played football. We played basketball. We played outside. See, kids today, they don't play outside. They don't know what to do to even halfway protect themselves. You got some coaches that tells these kids the wrong way to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
You don't lead with your head when you tackle. I mean, you could get head injuries from a sudden stop in your car.
Yep.
We are trying to mandate safety, but you can't mandate safety. You have to teach safety.
Yeah. All right, Keith.
Putting bicycle helmets on. You know, that's all I have to say, young man.
All right, Keith. Thank you so much for checking in. I really appreciate it. Keith ain't buying it. Keith says, no, I'm not buying it. Bicycle helmets and kids are a little too soft these days is, I think, Keith's take on that. And, yes, you could get a head injury from slamming the brakes on your car. We don't set out to do it 45 times over an hour and a half, though. That's football.
Bubble wrap everybody.
Oh, God. Here we go. News is next. It's Matt Bubalad for Patty Vasquez here on 720 WGN. Star Wars The Force Awakens opened for previews on Thursday night. My family, all six of us, was at a showing at 9:30 at night. Even though the kids had school the next morning, I had to get up for work. We didn't get home till after midnight. It was so worth it. Now, I know that some people hate Star Wars, don't care about Star Wars, whatever. I also know some people love it, grew up with it, and are very into it. One of those people, I believe, is the producer of Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, Mr. Craig Collins, who joins us on the phone right now. Hello, Craig.
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Excellent, because I've seen Star Wars. Life before Star Wars and life after Star Wars, and it was amazing.
So Craig apparently is giving it a good review. Now, Craig, let's just set some ground rules here. This is a Star Wars safe zone. I encourage, if you've seen it, if you haven't seen it yet, if you want to call and talk about it, 312-981-7200. We will reveal a little bit of stuff about it, but nothing that is going to alter your viewing of it. There's some... As you can imagine, there's some really big things that happen in the movie. There's a reason mm-hmm. that they are so secretive with their trailers and everything else like that. So we won't talk about the big things that happen, but there's a lot of little things that happen that we can talk about that I think were awesome. One is that there was so much hype around this movie, just like there were the prequels when they came out, that there's a chance for this to either be really awesome or really disappointing. And I'm guessing from your what you've said so far, you are so in the, oh, my God, this was not disappointing at all, this was awesome category.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's because the prequels were so disappointing. And I think you and I talked once when you filled in with Patty and I was there producing about how big of a letdown they were, that going into this, the expectation wasn't the same. When the prequels came out, I think we all expected them to be amazing movies. And then when they weren't, we were really sad. So maybe we were a little bit less enthusiastic going in. And for that reason, or I don't know if it was just because it's a great movie, I left as satisfied as I could be for a guy who was a Star Wars fan.
Yeah. I want to see it again because I'm, you know, the first time you see it and you're a dork like us who's just so excited about this, you just sort of enjoy it and roll with it and you don't question it at all. So I wonder if on a second, although I know Elliot Serrano has seen it a couple of times already and he wrote some really good stuff about it. He nitpicked, I think, a few things, but overall he was really happy with it. I don't know if on a second viewing I'd say, well, you know, I wish I hadn't done that. I wish they hadn't done this. Overall, though, I think kudos to J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan. They did a great job. I thought it was a beautiful introduction of new characters and weaving in of the characters that we left behind in the last trilogy. I thought they were maybe not as integral as I would have liked. I really was hoping at first when they announced everybody's coming back that this was really their story. But now that I've seen it, I'm more than fine with what they did. The way they brought them back, it's not just cameos, but it's not, oh my God, this whole film is about them and everything's about them. But the new characters I bought into and I cared for, they did a great job of making me love these new characters, including a little droid that you look at and you think, all right, so here's the new toy. I mean, there's so many BB-8 toys and different cool things out there that you worry that, like, you know, when the first movie, the first prequel came out, The Phantom Menace, and there were these pod races that young Anakin Skywalker was in.
Oh.
And it was a cool video game and everything. And I think you saw that movie and then you thought, was that whole pod racing thing in there because that would make a great video game? You could have argued that at the time, right? Here, there's this BB-8, R2-D2 that's been done before. How about we introduce this new character? And he's really cute and stuff. And you're like, okay, so here's your marketing ploy for this movie. But then that character, this stupid little droid, makes you fall in love with him, honest to God, in a way that R2-D2 never, I mean, R2-D2 is always cute and funny. This thing blows R2-D2 away.
Right, and I'm trying not to spoil the nice moments of interaction between the new and the old cast, but there is a moment with BB-8 and one of the characters from the past that is touching and you know, all the things you just said it was, and I think it lasts like 30 seconds, and I still really enjoyed that moment. There were so many nice kind of like paying respect to the Star Wars movies and the things we would care about, and like you said, integrating the characters from the past movies that we know and not just doing it as a cameo for the sake of, you know, this is what Han's been up to. They're more involved in the story, but they're not the main protagonists of the story. That is the new characters, who are excellent. The female lead is incredible in the Star Wars movie, I thought. From
Absolutely.
Start to finish,
Daisy Ridley is the actress's name. She plays Rey in the movie. And I'll tell you, so Craig, so we go with my three boys and my daughter and my wife. And my daughter, you know, she's okay with Star Wars. She's never been totally into it. She left that movie so in love with Star Wars because she loved that there's a woman in this movie that is just kicking everybody's ass. I mean, that was the strongest female character. I can't think of a more badass female character in another movie. I mean, I guess Charlize Theron in Mad Max earlier this year, some people like that. But for a Star Wars movie, to have an African-American type lead actor, to have a woman lead actor like that, I thought that was just awesome. And she is awesome in the entire movie. There's a great script. She acts the hell out of it. And you just fall in love with her. And it's not, I mean, the prequels, the acting was so cheesy. And here's a great, one of the other, I think, great things that J.J. Abrams did with this is he set them in real places. He didn't take a bunch of people and say, okay, here's all these green screens. Now pretend that all this is, I mean, so much of it looks so real, so actually on set. You can tell it's not just digital. And it's and setting a lot of it on Earth-like planets, not just a bunch of deep space chase, but actual interaction with greenery and trees and water, I think really added just a layer and an effect to it that made it more real. And the dogfights in the air just look so much different and so much better. And maybe that's the technology 10 years later. I don't know, because we know they're not actually flying the planes around and doing that stuff. But it looked so honestly real. It was amazing to me.
Yeah, absolutely. The way that they kind of wove in the new technology with paying some kind of respect that the first Star Wars movies kind of looked to us. It was so different, like you said, than the prequels that said, well, there's all this new technology. Let's really blow the doors off and show people something that they've never seen before. And in the process of doing that, they lost some of the feel of what a Star Wars movie is. And this movie definitely has that feel. I felt like I was at a Star Wars movie from beginning to end. And like you said, the female actress too does such a great job of being such a powerful woman. There's a scene early on in the movie where they get attacked, turn another character, and the male character is
quit holding my hand. Why are you holding my hand?
Yeah, every time.
I loved that.
For her hand. So great. And it's then, just moments like that. Yeah.
And it was after she had like knocked him out. I mean, she had knocked him out. And then they're on the run together, and he's grabbing her hand like he's going to help the damsel in distress. Yeah.
Right. Oh, it's so perfect.
It's a beautiful nod to the changing landscape and what these movies probably should really represent. I thought that was all wonderful. You and I talked about some theories. Now, we can reveal a couple of little things. I believe you and I talked about the character of Finn, played by, is it John Boyega, I believe is his name?
Correct, yes.
You and I had debated whether, I believe you and I did this, debated whether or not, because we keep seeing him in a stormtrooper outfit, and then he's got a lightsaber, you know, so we know this about him. So is he a plant, or what is he? And no, he's an actual stormtrooper who, like, gets a conscience and decides, I can't do this anymore. And so he kind of changes sides.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had a lot of theories going in that I believe we talked about all of them, Matt, and I got almost none of my theories correct, and that was definitely one of them. I thought that he wouldn't actually be a stormtrooper, because we also talked about stormtroopers used to all be the clone of the same guy. There was one person that a whole bunch of clones were made,
right,
and that's
right.
What the stormtroopers are. And they actually even mentioned that early on in the movie, that the new approach is to take people and try to brainwash them from childhood to be stormtroopers.
Yeah, it sounds like they just steal kids from families,
right?
And then they're stolen, and now they're part of this, and they raise them. Because you're right, when something goes wrong, the one guy says that, you know, maybe we should go back to the clones.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, so I thought that was fascinating that they tried to clear up things and you know, make you understand where we were 30 years later. And I liked that it wasn't all neat and tidy. It wasn't so Princess Leia and Han Solo went on to run the galaxy and everything was cool and now something's gone wrong. It was how maybe things really would happen. When you defeat somebody, it doesn't mean the whole country necessarily falls. There's a vacuum maybe, and other people take over. And that's kind of the setup for this. The Empire is changed, but it's still there. It's not like there's been peace in the galaxy for the last 30 years.
No, right. It's not. They're not even actually fighting the same bad guy empire. It's not the Sith anymore. It's their this own faction of people that sprouted up from sort of a worship of Darth Vader. So it's a new kind of regime that's trying to take over.
See, that's interesting, and I don't know that I necessarily read it that way. I feel like I know it's, you know, now it's called the First Order and not the Empire.
Correct.
But it's still stormtroopers. It's still the starships that are the
right.
same. So I feel like it is just a continuation. It's different. You know, maybe it's, to me, it's like, okay, it's still the U.S., but now the Democrats took over the presidency over the Republicans. But it's still a group of leadership and stuff like that. But they're still kind of running the same deal, right?
No, you're right. And I just like the fact that it's sort of nuanced and different, though, that it's not none of it felt rehashed. Nothing that they did felt. And I know there are moments that some people criticize as being very similar to the New Hope movie. But I think that was just paying respect to it. I don't think that was being lazy in their script writing. And so I think the movie was excellent in the way that it kind of changed what we were expecting, but in a very fulfilling way.
708 just said, please stop. You're wrecking the movie for me. How are we wrecking the movie? We've given, like, nothing away. We've given nothing away that you haven't seen in trailers, I don't think.
Right. Yeah. The only moment we've actually explained in detail, you see in the first 15 minutes of the movie, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. 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 And we really haven't explained much at all. But we're going to explain a little bit more. So stay tuned. Hold on. Craig Collins is on the phone, producer for Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez. 312-981-7200. If you want to talk about it all, if you've seen it, talking about the art of it and different things without giving too much away, we're geeking out here. 720 WGN. Matt Bubalin for Patty Vasquez here on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. We're talking Star Wars with Craig Collins, Patty's producer, who's a Star Wars geek like me. 312-981-7200, if you want to jump in. We're not revealing too much, right, Mr. Craig?
No, not at all.
No, we're not at all. So originally, Craig, you were going to try to go to some like marathon screening where you're going to watch the six previous films before you saw it. Now, that didn't end up working out. Do you know of anyone that did do that?
I didn't. I had a free ticket, too, so I could have given it to any of my friends, and I offered it to a few people, and everyone passed, even though it ended with a screening of the brand-new movie, and all my geek friends wanted to see it. That was a long thing to do.
It would have been really hard, I think. Although, you know, my family and I went back and watched New Hope and we watched Empire. We meant to get to Return of the Jedi before we saw it. It's just it's the holidays and you have so much going on. There's no time. We didn't get to it.
Sure.
But now that I'm reading and I avoided everything Star Wars, literally for like 4 months, I remember seeing you here once late at night and you're reading about Kylo Ren. I'm like, I don't want to know. I don't want to know anything. I tried to go in as blind as possible. But now I saved things like Entertainment Weekly, different things like that. Now I'm going to go back and read it all. And I'm you know, fascinated with catching up on all of it. And I actually now, because of some things I'm reading, debating who certain bad guy characters are and things like that that we saw in the movie or heard about in the movie but didn't get too much information. Now there's all these theories. I kind of want to go back, actually, and watch the first three movies because people wonder if there's clues in those about certain things.
Yeah, and I think there are. And I the AMC Theater is the one that put this on, and they've been doing this a lot now with the Marvel movies that come out. They actually do marathons of every Marvel movie, starting with like Iron Man, to lead you up to whatever the newest one is. And there's actually even more of those than Star Wars movies. So I think it does kind of give you a little base of information for what they might be showing you in the newest movie. So it is nice to get that refresher. It just would have been 24 hours at a movie theater, and you're not really allowed to leave. So that would have been tough.
That would be really tough. Was there?
There's only so much popcorn you can consume.
Well, without like throwing up, yes. I mean, without getting sick. And I got to tell you, so we get to the movie. Colleen's coming separately because we're trying to get Christmas shopping done and stuff, and I want to get there early. I'm not getting there late. So I'm like, you know what, Kyle? You take a separate car. You get there when you get there. It's fine. I'll take the kids. We'll get
– Right.
So Jack and I decide – Jack loves popcorn, my oldest son, Jack. And so we buy the smallest popcorn because we're trying not to – you know, it's 9:30 and I don't want to be incredibly unhealthy. But I let him then do it up because Jack has a way of adding in the artificial butter and salt, which makes it so ridiculously delicious. Even though it's like a heart attack in the making, I let him do it. So he comes in with it, which he then spills on my seat as he sets it down. It's, you know, one of those theaters with the reclining seats. He spills it on my seat, picks it up. We clean it up. It's so bad. We have to go get napkins because he is layered on the butter in such a tremendous way that now I have an oil slick on my Lazy Boy. That I literally had to go get wet napkins to wipe. I had a lot of work to do before I got to this movie. But he caught early in the...
That does sound lovely.
Oh, God, it was good. It was good, Craig. It's terrible. It's so good. And that's why I can't ever sit through a marathon. We'd be comatose.
Right. All the best food is actually really bad for you, though, I think, sometimes. Especially at the movie theater. You can get no healthy items, and spending a day there is probably a heart attack in the making. You're probably right about that.
If you would have done the marathon and eaten the amount of popcorn you probably could, it's probably like smoking a carton of cigarettes for about 10 years I think you're taking taking a few years off your life by ingesting that amount of fake butter and salt and stuff like that.
Probably people that are risking not seeing the new movie, because by going through the first six with all that food, you might not make it to the seventh movie. You might actually health-wise have to leave.
Yes. You might go into cardiac arrest and just miss the movie. All right, Craig, you got to hold on because we got to do the news. Jim is on. He's got a comment. Jim, just hold on a couple of minutes. We'll get to you right after the news. We got to take a quick break. Then Esmeralda's got the news next on 720 WGN.
The boy is dangerous. They all sense it. Why can't you?
Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Suffering, Esmeralda. Suffering.
Hate leads to suffering. It does.
Maple Byland for Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. We're talking about Star Wars, for goodness sakes, people. Craig Collins, Patty's producer, is on the phone. Craig saw the movie. Esmeralda, will you see the movie? Have you seen any of these movies?
I've seen the first old one. And then, no, because people are like, the first one's really this one.
The original?
Or whatever.
You're saying?
So okay. The first original, and then I've seen the one with the Ewoks.
You skipped the best one.
All right.
That's the best.
I just... The second one. Seen the one with the Ewoks.
Oh,
and then
wow.
I think the first of the newer ones.
Well, you just hop right around that galaxy, don't you?
Yeah, wow.
But then I haven't seen anything like the other ones. Nothing.
And Matt, you do still think the second one of the old ones, as Esmeralda would say, is the best one. What do you think is the second best movie out of all seven?
Oh, boy. It's funny. We just rewatched Empire Strikes Back. I think that up until last week, everybody would have easily said that was the best one ever.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
In my mind, this is right up there with it. I don't know if this is better or not, but my God, it's right up there. That's for sure. Now, maybe that's just because they actually told a great news story and also included everybody I loved and wanted to see from the mm-hmm. old thing. So I don't know if I'm distorted in that. I don't know, like 10 years from now, what we'll say, but
yeah,
I want to go see this movie again. That's for sure.
I definitely agree. I think that the Empire Strikes Back is far and away the best out of anything we had seen up until this weekend. And this movie is right in that echelon of being good and doing a lot of things right that the prequels certainly didn't do, as we've said.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, a couple of quick calls here with you, Craig. Hang in here with us and talk to these fine listeners who normally listen to Patty Vasquez at this time. Jim's on 720 WGN. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning to you.
How are you?
I am the world's foremost Harrison Ford fan. I am speaking to you from Williams Bay, Wisconsin, across the street from the theater where he was first paid to act.
Get out of here.
Wow.
I am out of here. I'm about 90 miles northwest out of here.
Where was he first paid to act, and what was it for? Apparently you know some history here.
I do, but I'll make it relevant to the topic. He was first paid to act at a little theater called the Belfry Theater in Williams Bay, which is right next to Lake Geneva. And so when he dropped out of Ripon, he was recruited by a Hollywood talent agent to spend a summer, 1964, at the Belfry Theater, which then was the end of the line for the Chicago Northwestern, now Metra, that ends in McHenry. And so for for 3 months, he married his first wife and did his first acting on the stage. And then he left there and went to California after learning carpentry skills here. And the rest is history. So it's kind of interesting to be where it started and we hope he keeps making movies.
Yeah.
We're glad to see where it ends, too.
Yeah, no kidding. That's pretty cool that that you have some of that history with there. So... what did you think overall? And just so you know here, we're not giving away anything about the movie. There's certain things
Understood.
That happen that people still need to see. So what did you think overall of the movie? You're obviously a fan. Where does this rank? And did you walk out disappointed at all or totally happy to be back in this thing?
Totally happy to be back in the ball game. Totally happy that anybody of any age could walk in and get it. You know, hey, look, folks, I saw this movie when I was 16. In 1977 at the Wheeling Twin Drive-In on Milwaukee Avenue, I felt like I was 16 again. Harrison Ford, he seems like he's 16 again. It's not like I was so disappointed with the fourth Indiana Jones film that he didn't do much. I will tell you this, Han is running, he's blasting, he is everything he's been, and at 73, it was just incredible. Fantastic movie. I finally don't hate J.J. Abrams. I think he destroyed Star Trek. If this had been the way he'd done Star Trek, the Millennium Falcon wouldn't be recognizable, and everybody would be wearing polyester uniforms. But, no, this was perfect. Any old-timer would love it. And also, if I could hop in a time machine, please make me 23. I want to date Daisy Ridley so bad. She is an incredible, incredible screen presence. And ladies, if you need an action hero, you've got one. She is awesome.
I totally agree, Jim. Thank you so much for the call. That's how my daughter felt, Craig. She walked out of that movie so excited and thrilled. I think she'd go see it again with me. And it's funny, he mentions, you know, you wish you were 23 because we're too old to love Daisy Ridley. But she has made older guys fall in love with a younger girl in a way that hasn't happened since Natalie Portman, not as Padme, but in Beautiful Girls.
Yeah, no, absolutely, exactly correct. I don't think that most guys who left the theater just liked her because of the way she looks.
Not at all, because they don't bother making her look.
Everyone, yeah,
that's the other great thing. They don't bother making her look pretty. She's never done up.
Yep.
She's not. There's none of that. She's on the run. She's beating people up. She's avoiding things. She's shooting people. She's doing all these awesome things, and she's just kicking butt. And you just fall in love with her because of her personality and because of the way she carries herself. There's no sexualization of it at all, which is really a great, I mean, not that Star Wars ever did that, except for the whole Princess Leia in the Jabba the Hutt thing, where, and they've also recently announced they're not going to sell that toy anymore. They're not putting Princess Leia in that costume anymore, which I think is pretty interesting change. Maybe that's because of Disney ownership or not, but I think that's a pretty cool turn of events that the girl power that's come into these movies and now apparently going to be part of it all. 773 asks, if a person didn't see or remember the last two movies, will it have an impact on seeing this episode or will I understand it? And Craig, I don't know what you think, but I think as long as you know that when the last thing ended, they defeated Darth Vader and they partied with the Ewoks, you're fine going into this. You don't need to know anything, quite honestly. And quite honestly, this could be your first Star Wars movie. I don't think you're going to have a problem with any of it.
Yeah, I don't think, obviously, you'd appreciate some of the nods to the hardcore fans that are in the movie. But those you don't need to enjoy the movie. I think this could be your first experience of a Star Wars film for sure. And you would come away probably really liking the main characters a lot and not really totally understanding the big pull to the older characters that we care about. But absolutely, this could be your first movie. No problem at all.
All right. Chewie is called in at 312-981-7200. And Craig, you're going to love this because, Chewie, you actually went to one of those marathons, didn't you?
Yes, I did, at the AMC River East 21.
So did you?
Yes, I had a ticket to that.
All right, so Chewie, did you start with Episode 1, The Phantom Menace?
Yes, that started at 1 o'clock in the morning on Thursday.
1 a.m. Yes. Thursday, Phantom Menace, okay. And so this starts at 1 a.m. on a Thursday and then culminates with like a what time showing of The Force Awakens, like 7 o'clock the next night?
No, it was 7 o'clock Thursday night.
7 p.m. Thursday night, so from 1 a.m. Thursday morning to 7 p.m. Thursday night. Did you watch all 6 episodes leading up to The Force Awakens?
Yes.
They
showed all 6 episodes.
How much time did they give you in between each movie?
In between each movie, it was actually about like 20 minutes or 30 minutes between each movie. And then they did a break between the trilogies of about an hour and 45 minutes. And then they also did a break after Episode 6 before 7, about an hour and 45 minutes. The nice thing is they gave us a lanyard that let us go in and out as much as we wanted. So you can actually go out and eat down the street and come back in.
All right. Did you actually watch all 6 movies, or did you bail out for some of it to get some rest?
No, I just took cat naps during some of the movies. I tried to take a nap during the first 3 because I'm not really a big fan of the prequels.
Sure.
But I ended up, unfortunately, watching all of them. And then, like, during, I'd say, probably 4 and 5, I took a little bit of a cat nap. Yeah, unfortunately, that 5, Empire Strikes Back is my favorite movie. I actually saw it when it first came out at the Will Rogers Theater on Belmont Avenue when it first came out back in the day. And here's the funny thing. You know what? They actually showed a movie before they showed Empire, you know, at the Will Rogers, and it was Mickey's Christmas Carol.
It was a Disney cartoon, Mickey's Christmas Carol?
When Empire came out in 1980.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
All right, so you fall asleep a little bit during New Hope. You fall asleep a little bit during Empire Strikes Back. You sit through Return of the Jedi. What'd you do during the hour 45 minute breaks? Did you actually leave the building?
Yes, well, I went down the street to get something to eat down at the, if I can say, down at the subway. That's
sure.
Right by there.
Yeah, that's fine. What'd you want to say, Craig?
Can we just say, and I don't mean to offend our caller at all, but you did the worst possible version of this marathon by seeing all of 1, 2, 3, and 6 and not seeing much of 4 and 5. That was the worst way to do it, but more power to you for succeeding.
The thing is, by the time 4 and 5 came around, it was like I was kind of getting a little bit tired, and I tried not to take too much of a nap. It was maybe like 15, 20 minutes, just kind of like energize a little bit. But I kid you not, when 7 came on, everybody, because it was 3D, they showed 7 in 3D, so everybody was up and focused, and it was like you can hear a pin drop when that movie was playing. So when something happened, everybody was excited, and everybody was cheering, and they went nuts.
You know, I think it almost would have worked out better for you, like Craig's saying, if they would have shown it in the order they were released. So started at 1 a.m. with 4, 5, 6, because then you're kind of amped up, you're awake, you're seeing the really good ones, and then you would have probably had an easier time getting your cat naps in during 1, 2, and 3 than leading up to the big main event.
Yeah, it probably would have made more sense that way, but I think they ran it in like the order they did because they wanted to kind of have like the timeline going from beginning to end.
Sure, and build it up. Yeah, that totally makes sense because it's good to end with the Ewok celebration and then say, okay, 30 years later, here we go. What's next?
So was the theater actually packed for every single movie? Did people leave and come back for whole movies, or was every seat taken for 6 consecutive movies?
It was actually in 2 theaters. They ran it in 1 theater that held 400 people, and that was totally sold out. And then the theater I was in was a smaller theater. It was almost like a little bit under 300 people, and that was packed except for like the first 2 front rows. You know, no one sat there, but they all stayed for all 7 movies. You know, they would go out during the break, but then everybody would come back. And there was people dressed up. There was people dressed up with like the Chewbacca onesies, and there was people dressed up like BB-8, and there was a lady there that had the Santa Claus hat with the Yoda ears.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a little small community, you know, by the time, you know, everybody was there, because there was people there waiting in line to get in from 8 o'clock Wednesday night to get into the marathon that started at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. I believe it. My son did wear his Darth Vader onesie pajamas to the showing. My 15-year-old son wore Darth Vader pajamas to it.
I'm wearing my onesie now.
Excellent. Chewy, so but how do you think it affected you getting to the 7th movie? Because now you're clearly tired. It's kind of like we've been waterboarding you for a night, and now we're telling you to go have some fun and watch this movie. Did it, like, totally affect you? Like, damn, I wish I would have been rested and ready for this? Or were you so hyped up on adrenaline that it worked out just fine?
Well, it worked out fine because by the time the 7th movie came, because it's in 3D, you kind of have to, like, watch. So I was actually up, and I was amped and ready to watch the movie.
And
so the catnaps helped.
And that's interesting. So I only saw it in 2D. I generally don't care for 3D unless it's really an important way to see something. And I didn't feel like this was. None of the other ones were to me. Do you feel like it really was worthwhile to have it in 3D other than it kept you awake?
Not really. I mean, I wish it would have been in 2D because I have an issue with 3D where I can't really wear the glasses too long because I get a headache. But, I mean, it was very vibrant, and it was rich, and it was very colorful, but I think it would have been just as good in 2D.
Yeah, I could see that. All right, Chewy, thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate it. Matt Bubal here for the Patty Vasquez Show on 720 WGN. We're speaking with Patty's producer, Craig Collins. Craig, was there a favorite, like, nod to the past that you can give away? I'll tell you mine. My son picked this out. There's a scene on the Millennium Falcon. Somebody is going through like one of the storage bays or something and getting something, and they like hold up this ball and then throw it aside. And my son looks at me, I didn't even catch it. My son looks at me and goes, that was Luke's thing that he was, you know, practicing with his lightsaber with, that was shooting the bolts at him. And I totally didn't catch that at first, but there were a lot of nice little nods like that, that, you know, the Star Wars fans crack up at. It doesn't matter if you didn't know the movies. It wouldn't have meant anything to you, but they worked these nice little things in there like that.
My favorites, I think, are ones you wouldn't want me to give away. The way in which they kind of push the plot to be similar to A New Hope at some point. There's something there that I really liked. And then, I don't know, some of the cameos had interesting additions to them that I thought, but
other than that, I think I like the one your son liked. There's other ones that I like, but I don't want to spoil any of the plot of the movie.
Well, okay. There's one other one that I will say. I'm not exactly sure what you're referring to, because are you referring to what's in the poster? Because I think that's pretty well known, isn't it?
Well, it's not just that there's a Death Star-esque thing that's in the poster. You're right. That's pretty well known. I think it's the way in which they have to attack the Death Star that I really like. There's something that happens that forces them to focus on a specific point in the Death Star, and that is very similar to, you know. And so I don't want to tell you how that all happens, but I thought it was a really eloquent way to work in all the pilots flying toward one specific area.
Yeah. And
I might have just spoiled too much right there.
No, I don't think he did. And you know what? Even the sound effects seem so crisp. I loved the sounds of the engines of the ships. I just felt that it was better than it's been in the past. I also love that there's a joke about the Millennium Falcon, and somebody screws up how fast, you know, the famous the ship that made the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs.
7 parsecs, yeah.
Somebody says, wait, what's the? It's 12 parsecs, right?
It's 12. You're right. It's 12. Yeah.
And somebody in the movie says 14, and Han Solo is very upset by this. It's 12. And there's a lot of nice little nods to the past in it. And it's one thing I will say, poor Carrie Fisher. I mean, Harrison Ford looks so great in this movie, and even though somebody busted his leg while he was filming it. And poor Carrie Fisher, and I know she's had abuse problems and all sorts of things over the years, but her voice is nowhere near the same. She doesn't really look like, I mean, Harrison Ford looks like Han Solo.
Right.
Carrie Fisher does not look much like Princess Leia to me. I felt bad for her.
The first time she's on screen, I was with a friend of mine who's a big Star Wars nerd too, and he goes, wow, she just looks awful. And I'm like, dude, we're watching a movie. Be quiet. But he was right. She didn't come off, like you said, the same. And even the moments where Han and Leia kind of go off and they're reminiscing about the past a little bit, I think to myself, would Han still be super attracted to Princess Leia at this point? I don't mean to be mean, but I'm not feeling it as much. And like you said, Harrison Ford still looks a lot like Han Solo, so there might be another lady in the galaxy that'd be into Han.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
I don't mean to be mean.
You're saving a little something for episode 8 there, I guess. Maybe we'll get more into that. Will you go see it again?
Oh, I will go see this movie again for sure. I actually saw it at Block 36, the new dine-in theater, and we were at the opening night of that whole theater, so they gave us food and stuff during it.
Oh, cool.
There were waiters going through, so I feel like I missed a couple scenes. I need to fully focus on it again, but I'll see it a couple times, and then episode 8, I'll be at 7 o'clock showing on a Thursday night, whenever that comes out. I'll be there right away, too.
You know, it's interesting, and because now I've read things about the film and about characters who will appear in the next film, and I'm like, I didn't know those characters survived this film. I, like, have to go back and watch it again now, because I'm real. It's like, wait a minute, really? I didn't. Yeah. Oh, I got to see this again, because maybe I didn't catch everything. It reminds me, actually, you know what's funny, Craig? I'll tell you a funny story. So Darth Maul was played by Ray Park, a guy who's like a martial arts guy. And he came here in studio, was on John Williams' show when that movie came out. I got to lightsaber duel with him on Pioneer Court.
That's amazing.
And I said to him and his guy, I think we had him on the air, and then we were doing some extra stuff with him. And I'm like, so do you think there's any hope you'll be in any of the other movies? And he looks at me, he's like, no. And his agent goes, he was cut in half. And I literally, when I first saw that, I hadn't caught that he got sliced completely in half. I thought he got hit and like went down through the, you know, fell into an abyss. But I didn't get that he had been actually sliced in half. And I was like, oh, well, I feel dumb for saying that then. But then in the cartoons that were on Disney Channel, they brought Darth Maul back. So maybe there's still some hope down the road.
Oh, there's definitely still some hope. They could put him back together somehow.
That was the biggest mistake, killing him off like that, because Darth Maul, out of all the movies, Darth Maul is still my favorite bad guy they ever had.
Yeah, you're right. That's the only redeeming quality, actually, in those movies is Darth Maul. He is by far the best part of any of that.
I think I would agree. All right. Craig Collins, thank you so much for staying up on a night that you didn't have to. When are you back here with Patty?
I'm back with Patty on January 1st. I will be there on the 31st with Steve and Johnny for New Year's Eve.
Oh, excellent. Oh, that'll be fun. It's always good to hear Steve and Johnny on New Year's Eve. Well, thanks for hanging out a little late on the Patty Vasquez Show, Craig.
Sure, no problem. Thank you, Matt.
For being our guest, you get absolutely nothing, but thank you very much for being here anyways. All right, we got to take a quick break, and the news is next on 720 WGN. It's Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, and it is pretty late, but I'm Matt Bubala filling in for Patty tonight. Patty's off until the new year. Esmeralda Leon is still up in the newsroom. Texter from 573 says, Ray was everything my 11-year-old self wanted Padme to be, and I was just so stinking happy to see X-Wings again. They are my absolute favorite spacecraft. What does that mean to you, Esmeralda? It means nothing.
It's a ship that flies, right?
I love that you've seen the Star Wars movies so sporadically that you're like, I saw the first one and the third one.
Yeah. I just saw the first one in its entirety probably a couple years ago.
So you had seen others and never seen the original?
Yeah, I'd only seen bits and pieces. And, you know, because it's so ingrained in our culture now that it kind of felt that I had already seen it.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh, I haven't actually seen it. It's in the whole way through.
So a couple of years ago, you actually sit down. Somebody forces you, I'm guessing, to actually watch the first
one. I actually saw
it
outside in Millennium Park.
Oh, that must have been kind of cool.
Yeah, that was neat.
But so you were sitting there talking and drinking with somebody and not even watching, were you?
Well, I mean, because you seem like, oh, yeah, I've seen this part. I've seen this part. I've seen this part.
So you sort of have seen it.
I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it now. And
it's been on, and I was there.
It was a while ago, though. So
do you have any interest at all in seeing the new one?
Yes. No, I do. Just because, you know what? You know who could really convince me was Nick.
Oh, Nick's not going to convince you to go see the new one, I don't think.
No, he loved it.
He did?
He loved it.
Oh, my God. That is funny because I'm avoiding Nick at all costs because I see Nick on Facebook all the time.
And no, he loved it.
Nick was so anti this new Star Wars movie. He was, spoil it on my page, and he's saying all this. I'm like, God damn it, Nick, just stay away from me.
He came out and he said that it was phenomenal.
It was good.
So the fact that he likes it, it makes me think that the movie is, you know, it's not just...
If somebody who is inclined to go and hating the snot out of
it
comes out saying, hey, you know what? That was actually pretty good.
It's a little more than just spaceships and shooting things. There's a story there.
It is a little more than spaceships and shooting things. We appreciate that. All right. After the news, there's a lot more to talk about. poor Steve Harvey. I don't know what to make of him. We're going to talk about that a little bit, as well as Baby, It's Cold Outside. That song. Do you like when you hear that song on the radio? What do you think of Baby, It's Cold Outside, Esmeralda? If you hear that song, you're like, oh, yeah, cute little Christmas song.
It's cute, but then you start listening. You go, wait a minute, what?
That's the thing. We have to talk about this a little bit. We'll get to it after the news.
I really can't stay.
But Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Drink.
Oh, well, it's like a vitamin for when you're bummed out about your career. Or it's to make you smile and help you reach your goals.
Yeah, something's up with that.
No, wait, I want to show you my penis.
That was a Saturday Night Live skit this past weekend with Tina Fey and Kenan Thompson playing Bill Cosby. And Baby, It's Cold Out. It's funny. I was dying laughing. I said something to my wife when I heard that. Because I just said something to her a week before that I hear that song played endlessly on whenever you're hearing a station with Christmas songs on. Baby, It's Cold Outside, it's on too much. It's also my favorite place to hear it is there's a very cute Barnes & Noble commercial with Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga where they're both in there singing and realize each other's there and give each other a big hug and it's cute. But that line about what's in this drink, and this guy's just totally begging her to stay. Hey, let me fix another drink. Come on, it's cold outside. Why do you want to ruin my, it doesn't say reputation, but something about why would you want to hurt my pride by leaving? He's basically cajoling her for like 45 minutes. Like, come on, don't go. Let me pour you a few more drinks. It's kind of a 1940s date rape anthem, right? So there was an interesting article about it in the Tribune, and I guess Funny or Die also did a parody about it that was a little darker than just this Bill Cosby one. Defenders of Baby, It's Cold Outside argue that when Frank Lesser wrote the song in the 1940s, I mean, it was the 40s, a little bit more of an innocent time, no doubt. This was obviously not his intention, especially because he was known for singing it with his wife. His daughter, Susan Lesser, wrote that her parents imagined the song as two characters, the man named Wolf and the woman named Mouse. Although that right there, her saying, oh no, you know, they imagine these two characters, Wolf and Mouse. Big Bad Wolf eats Mouse. It doesn't sound good in that context either, I don't think. Lester said, my mother treasured that song. She loved performing it. She loved the fact that it was theirs alone to perform for adoring audiences. In 1948, it was featured in the movie Neptune's Daughter, and soon enough, every artist of note was performing it, from Ella Fitzgerald, Louis Armstrong, and Ray Charles, to today's popular renditions by Frozen songstress Idina Menzel and the Elf soundtrack version by Will Ferrell and Zooey Deschanel. Until the last decade, the song was rarely considered controversial. Songs like Santa Baby and I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus were seen as far more raunchy because they directly linked romance or sex with Christmas. Baby, It's Cold Outside was a song about flirting. That's all there was to it, said Ace Collins, author of stories behind the best-loved Christmas songs. This song was a little risque for the holiday charts in 1949, but it wasn't unusual to hear flirting songs on the radio as regular pop hits. And once a song is established as a Christmas favorite, there's a slim chance of getting rid of it. Quote, these songs take you back to when you were small, Collins said. The people, the homes, the presents that meant so much to you, they become alive again. You can smell the house. You can hear the voices. The songs come back and touch us generation after generation. So Baby, It's Cold Outside is stuck and has kept sticking even once it was criticized. But with cultural influences like Saturday Night Live directly associating the song with rape, how much longer will a place like Macy's want to play it as you shop for holiday sweaters? Jasmine, do you care for, think anything about when you hear Baby, It's Cold Outside?
Not really.
Doesn't affect you at all? Doesn't matter?
No, but now that you said that, I'm thinking twice about it now.
Esmeralda, are you around up there? Baby, It's Cold Outside has a line where she says, well, hey, what's in this drink?
Yeah, it's a little funky, that song.
It's creepy.
And not in a funky
yes,
jam kind of way.
Not in a Bruno Mars kind of way.
It's kind of like, wait, what?
Wait, what is this
What
about?
Did he just say?
Yeah. And he's literally just begging her. She's like, no, I got to go. And he's like, nah, come on, one more drink. One more drink. It's
people are going to worry. He's like, no.
Yeah, I know. What drink will my this. Parents think? Well, this or that. And then she laughs, oh, what's in this drink? Yeah. But, I mean, that was probably very innocent. It wasn't like he was slipping her a Mickey. I'm sure at the time she's getting a little tipsy because she's drinking too much. I mean, I want to think that in the 40s it wasn't. He's slipping something extra in there. You think, Esmeralda, by that look you're giving me.
I don't know.
Saying, I think he poured a double shot of something in there.
Plying her with booze.
Well, that's clearly what he was doing.
A lot of booze.
Don't leave and let's keep drinking because I think good things will happen in the end. But that's such a common tale. I mean, that's every Friday night in a bar, really, in America, where people are, and two people start talking.
I guess, but no one's singing about it.
And wrapping it in Christmas presents.
Yeah, right? And calling it innocent. I think that might be the...
That we tend to call anything from the 1940s innocent, though.
Right.
Don't we?
Because it's simple times.
Yes. It was good.
There was no problems back then.
Good folk back then. They didn't do things like that. Yeah, I hate hearing the song. And it's played too darn much, quite honestly. And Santa Baby drives me crazy, too. Madonna doing the Santa Baby song just sounds... It's not the over-sexualization. It just sounds so materialistic. It just sounds so wrong. The Eartha Kitt version, I actually don't mind as much. Just Madonna singing it. I don't know why. It drives me insane, and I can't handle it. Is there a song, Esmeralda, that by this time of year... By the 22nd, you're like, all right, if I hear that again, I'm going to scream.
Not really, actually.
You're into all
of them. No, I don't mind. No, honestly, no, I don't mind any of them.
I actually heard.
I don't hear them that often,
I actually heard 12 Days of Christmas today on the radio. And that's like the most annoying Christmas song of all time. I don't know.
12 days.
You know, they sing it pretty fast, but.
Right.
And they, you know. Spiced it up a little and everything, but I was just like, God, why did somebody make this song? The last time I had heard it was the John Denver Muppets version, and even that I can't stand. That's, to me, the one song that, wow, why? Why play that? There's got to be more good Christmas songs.
There's a lot.
There was a study done that the most popular Christmas songs were all like the 40s, 50s, and 60s, because there's this like romantic link to them that we feel. new Christmas songs have much more trouble breaking through. Maybe that's because it's still some old Christmas song, more than likely. You know, it's a remake. Carrie Underwood, I think, has songs out this year. They sound good, but there's 18 different versions of everything. So why would you listen to a new one? That's my biggest problem with ever tuning into the Christmas radio station is I'm going to hear a song I just heard half an hour ago. There's not a lot of deep cuts.
No, there isn't a lot of Christmas deep cuts, no. You're going to have to go into the 1910s for those.
312 writes, great Key & Peele parody on YouTube of Baby It's Cold Outside where the woman winds up beating up the guy. You know what they need to cut? There needs to be a duet where they switch roles. I mean, come on. It's 2015. You know there's women, Esmeralda, who are got a guy over at the house at some point and be like, come on, just stay. Have a drink. I guarantee you that's happening these days.
Does that really make it any better? Kind of not good either way.
It would make it a little more even at least.
Okay.
Wouldn't it?
I mean, yes, but it's still not.
It would not be nearly as creepy. Tony Bennett at 80, whatever, and Lady Gaga at under 30 doing this. I mean, think about that. As cute of an old man as Tony Bennett is, and as God knows Lady Gaga has been around, that's the ultimate epitome of creepiness, isn't it? Some 80-year-old guy singing to a girl, stay for one more drink, and her having to say, what's in this drink? I mean, come on. It doesn't get worse than that.
But it's Tony Bennett.
That's how they get you. You just, it's just Tony Bennett. Believe me, that's how the Bill Cosby stuff happened, right? He got that goofy sweater on, and she's like, how bad could this be? He's a nice guy. No. Have a drink. So I want to hear, like some sweet, innocent, I want Carrie Underwood as playing the guy role, and then like, I don't know, who'd be a good innocent guy who you normally wouldn't think of as innocent? I don't know. Adam Levine saying, no, I really got to go. Esmeralda's not hearing it.
Still, it's just creepy. It's creepy either way.
773 says, Madonna singing Santa Baby is creepy in a being hit on by a senior citizen kind of way. Oh, that's sad. Now, Madonna can still hit on me. I'm not going to be upset about that. Or is it because Santa would be hitting on her and she's hitting on him in that song, I think, right? I would say that's on the woman on that one, Esmeralda.
I'll also say I don't think she's singing to Santa. Just going to throw that one out there if you didn't realize.
Singing more to a sugar daddy?
I'm assuming. Santa's not really bringing Corvettes and mink fur coats.
Well, if it's Madonna, she might be.
Right, just for Madonna.
Back in the day. Maybe not so much now. 312-981-7200. Mapu Bala here with you on Radio 720 WGN. This was the winter solstice yesterday, by the way. It was our shortest day of the year. Isn't it fascinating how January and February seem depressing as hell, yet it's getting lighter out every single day? It's a weird little thing that this was our what should be our worst day of the year. Like, oh my God, there's no light. And there was absolutely no sunlight today because it was dark and rainy all day long, right? But it's over. Like, the worst is actually over. Even though the snow and the cold and everything is coming, for the next 6 months, it's getting a little lighter out every day. I think that's kind of exciting. Esmeralda, you can't get happy about anything.
We still have to get through January.
Yes, but
and February.
Yes.
And March.
Yes.
And April.
However.
And sometimes May.
It's getting a little lighter out every day.
The worst cold was in January last year, wasn't it?
Oh, it's going to
So I'm still
there
embracing.
Are terrible things ahead. I'm not denying that. Although maybe not. What a crazy soft start to end of fall. I mean, except for that one snow before Thanksgiving. And I mean, it's rained like spring this whole last week, hasn't it? I mean, it feels like March.
Does. It's quite nice.
And I am very sad that we're not going to have a white Christmas. I will say
I'm
that.
Not.
You're, really?
I don't. You know what? I don't need snow. It just makes it worse and slippery and gross and cold. Because you know what happens with that snow? That pretty white snow is then it gets all gross and dirty and then just sitting on the corners of the streets everywhere.
I will agree.
And then it gets all hard and if you fall in it, it's the worst. It's like getting stabbed. awful.
When did you lose your childhood, Esmeralda?
Just say, have you ever fallen in a pile of dirty snow? It's the worst.
Yes, I have.
You get dirty and it hurts.
But at least you had some joy a couple days before that. Right now, you could slip and fall in a pile of dirty, muddy grass. That's not going to be any better. I know there's not ice on the ground, but it's still wet out. And that makes things slippery, too. I don't know. I understand. I don't want the bad traffic. I don't want people falling and hurting themselves and all that stuff. However, I think a good 2 inches a day before Christmas, nice and early in the day when it's not rush hour, that's easy to clean off.
And then it becomes 60 degrees and it melts.
No, not till the day after Christmas. But on Christmas Day then, it's a gorgeous little 2 inches of beautiful snow.
I agree with you, Matt.
Thank you, Jasmine.
I really do, because I went to school in Mississippi all my undergrad career, and I used to look forward to coming home to seeing snow and talking about it and Instagramming it. Now that I'm here, I'm like, oh, my goodness. I don't know why I was so excited.
No kidding.
Yeah.
So what if it's only for Christmas, or do you just want snow because it's winter and I want to see some snow?
I think for Christmas is fine with me.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go along with that. The older I get, the less snow I need to see, but I would like it for Christmas. There's just something about Christmas and having some snow on the ground. Unless you're somewhere, you know, like if I'm in Hawaii for Christmas, I'm all for that too. And then I don't need to see any snow on the ground. I'll just dream about it and play the song about it.
And barbecue.
Ooh, barbecue on Christmas?
Yeah. We did that in Mississippi, actually. It was 75 one Christmas that I had to stay there. And we barbecued and it was amazing.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah. Welcome to the South.
Yeah. See, now we make, this is on the opposite end of barbecue. I make on Christmas Day stuffed cabbage with sauerkraut and Polish sausage.
Wow.
Which probably couldn't be any different from barbecue. But I'm telling you, it's delicious. It's so good. And it works on Christmas. And you make a big mess of mashed potatoes and you make creamed corn. Creamed corn as a child sounded more disgusting than anything. We have a creamed corn recipe from our friend Rachel Moran, which, oh, it's so good. It's ridiculous. It's probably like 1,000 calories a spoonful, but it
is wow.
So good. I can't wait to cook on Christmas Day, quite honestly. Texter from 708 says, it needs to stay below 40. My spring trees and bushes are trying to start blooming. Thank you, Liz. And then a smart aleck from the 608 says, the shortest day of the year is when we start daylight savings time because it's only 23 hours. Because we change, you know, because we fall back. That's not what I was referring to. I was referring to how much light is in the day when the sun rises and sets, of course. All right. So Steve Harvey somehow read the cue card wrong, and he crowned, Miss Columbia as Miss Universe when it was really supposed to be Miss Philippines. Do I have this right so far?
Yes.
Now, I've only seen the highlights of it, but I believe he says it, and then it wasn't like they cut away to break and the accountants all met and retabulated. He just, they put the crown on her. She starts waving. She's got the big thing of flowers.
Right.
I don't know if there's a Miss Universe song like there is a Miss America song, but that stuff's going on.
Right.
And then he just says, hey, hold on a second to the crowd. Is that how it went down?
Yeah, kind of just like that.
Wow.
He kind of had a guilty look to it at first. He was like, oh, congratulations. And then he's looking, I think maybe, I don't know if he had an earpiece in. I need to look again, but he kind of looked at it like, uh-oh, you know, one of those moments.
What's great is the social media firestorm, of course, people just all over Steve Harvey about this. And it's, you know what? It's live TV, and sometimes we screw things up.
The memes on this is so serious. So serious.
Are they funny or are they just mean?
Some of them are really mean, but the rest of them are just, really, you had time to think about this? And social media is crazy. So they just trolled him for they're still trolling him, technically.
Somebody printed the card he was holding. A photo of it, and defended him, saying, look, this was so poorly laid out. Blame the people running the show. And I looked at it, and you looked at it too, Jasmine, and it says second runner-up, and then they taped in the name. First runner-up, they taped in the name, and then down in the right-hand corner, Miss Universe 2015, and then they printed that name under that. It seemed pretty easy to follow.
Plain as day.
I mean, now it's live TV, and so he's looking down, looking up, trying to connect with the audience, see where his people are. So I can understand you making a mistake, but you can't blame it on the cue card. You can't say they wrote the wrong thing in or they didn't make that easy. It wasn't like it was all jumbled together and you could have skipped a line. And I mean, it's on him.
Right.
I feel bad for him. He's a nice guy. He seems like a nice guy.
But the ratings were sky high.
That's the thing. And now we're going to start hearing the, I guess, the conspiracy theories.
Right.
Over that was a setup.
Right. And then are they going to do the same thing next year? Are they going to hire him again to do it?
Well, they should hire him again just so that people will be talking about the fact that he did it.
Right.
Leading into the show. Because this has to be the best press that this thing has gotten in forever.
Right.
Donald Trump, of course, jumped on it right away because he owned Miss Universe up until 6 months ago.
Yeah, you know he had to say something.
The first thing he tweets out is, wouldn't have happened on my watch. Which I want him to, and then today he's on the Today Show and he softens up. Steve Harvey's a great guy, made a human mistake, it's live TV, these things happen. But the night before, the jackass Donald Trump has to, of course, right away, wouldn't have happened on my watch. How do you prevent that from happening on your watch? You go into the future and correct that mistake before it happens? I mean, he had the card. It was written right. He's a human. He screwed up. Right. You're not preventing that on your watch. I mean, I don't know how, unless they make him in rehearsal go over again and again, this is how it's going to be laid out. And maybe he did have a rehearsal and he knew how the card was going to be laid out. But still, just in the moment, he read the wrong thing. He screwed up. I don't know. I just love Donald Trump saying stuff like that. Like, no, this is how I would have gotten it right.
Right. Donald Trump has a time machine. Definitely. Yeah. I don't believe that, but whatever.
312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you. Radio 720 WGN. Matt Bubala in for Patty Vasquez here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. After the news, I want to talk, Esmeralda, with you real quick about Christmas cards. Colleen and I sat and argued over a computer over our Christmas card today. It shows the photos. I mean, we got four kids. You can never get everybody looking right. We're old enough that we don't like how we look most of the time. So I had to figure this out. But I saw an interesting story. Did you see the family that sent out the Christmas card where the wife and the two daughters had green duct tape over their mouth?
Yeah.
And they were kind of handcuffed by Christmas lights.
Mm-hmm.
And the dad is kneeling behind them with a chalkboard that says peace on earth. And the like 4-year-old boy is standing behind them with a thumb up.
I saw that.
I don't know what to make of that. And I know people are upset about it and the photographer is defending it. And I just think, what? Do people not think at all? Or do some of us overthink way too much? I think it's more some people that just don't bother thinking at all or don't care or just love the idea that this will drive people insane. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring. Snowing. Matt Bubalin for Patty Vasquez here on Radio 720 WGN. You do got to think that with the whole Miss Universe thing, some of that, I don't know if they just, because they just, the other girl walks out and then makes Miss Columbia kind of lean down a little bit so she can then take the crown off of her head on national television. It's not like they go, you know, let's go to a break. Let's come back real quick. They just, hey, you know what? Now you get, you know, brought out into the courtyard and defrocked in front of everybody. That was a weird, that, you know. Bad enough that you think you won and you don't won, but now I got to stand here and just hand everything over for this other person. What a weird thing for her to go through. Donald Trump, actually, though, I can't believe I'm going to say this. He also said one thing that might have actually been smart. I don't say that lightly. He said that he thinks they should have just crowned them co-winners. Why not have two Miss Universes? What's the difference? It's not like they just played some incredible game of skill that one clearly beat the other in, and how could you dare award this to a second person as well? It's just Miss Universe.
I don't know. I heard controversy. I heard the other one wasn't so great. Let's just say that in nice words.
Wait, say that again?
I heard that the, not Miss Philippine, Miss Columbia. Columbia, she wasn't so great with her answers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's why she didn't win.
Oh, so some people would say, don't you dare crown two winners because she clearly.
Right.
But she was the first runner-up, wasn't she?
Yeah.
So she was close?
She was close, but no cigar. Sorry.
If it was just Miss America, maybe, but it's Miss Universe. This is the whole universe we're talking about. She can't be out there giving those answers. All right, so this Christmas card that this family, I don't know the family's name. I think that maybe has not been revealed. But Hannah Hawk's photographer is the photographer who posted it on her Facebook page that it was something she had taken. She posts the photo, and she actually writes on her Facebook page, finally, or maybe it was her Twitter feed, finally, peace on earth, exclamation point. And it's what I could see has started out as, oh, wouldn't this be funny? The women are all have duct tape over their mouth and they're tied up with Christmas lights. And the dad is holding a chalkboard, little chalkboard that says peace on earth. And he's smiling, sort of a smart alecky smile. And this little 5-year-old boy is like, yeah, thumbs up. And maybe it's overthinking it, but it's like, all right, how is that funny? And the reason it's not funny, and this goes to everything where people just get offended that people get offended. Why are they offended about that? Why don't they get over? What's the big deal? Well, it's because there's an inherent system of things that make that not funny. Like women suffer abuse all the time. Like when a woman speaks up in the workplace or as a politician or, you know, leans in, then she's a bitch instead of aggressive and assertive, which a man would generally be. These are real things. And so when somebody does this, it's like when it's just not that funny. It looks bad. It looks like that guy's a real jerk. Now, 630 writes, Matt, that's creative satire on people who take it so serious to have to get the perfect picture. There is no such thing. Well, agreed. There is no such thing as a perfect picture. But, you know, the writer in L Magazine is where there was a kind of a write-up on this today and why it is a bad and annoying. And the writer's like, I shouldn't even have to explain it. But she writes, we live in a society where the default to most things is white and male. For whatever reason, ideas and commentary delivered by men are preferred by men. When women speak, they're described as shrill or nagging or scolded for up-talking or decried for their vocal fry. The message this photo sends is that whatever sounds these females may be making, speaking, laughing, singing, weeping, yelling, whispering, humming, are all grating, unpleasant sounds better left unuttered and unheard. Now, maybe that's reading too much into it, but maybe that's also kind of the truth, that we act like that. Number two, because it implies that male speech is more important than female speech. The women are gagged. The men are not. The man is holding a message. The boy is expressing clear joy. The woman and girls have literally been subdued. Who in this photograph is worth listening to? Who in this photograph is being validated? Who in this photo has anything worth listening to from basic expressions of their own lived experience? Just look at the composition of cable news pundits, 74% men, or, you know, the U.S. Senate, 80% men. And it's clear what voices are valued. This gross photo reinforces that. I think it is interesting. And I think not everything has to be. Listen, we don't all have to take offense at something. But the funny thing is, it's a woman who runs the photography agency and she's defending it. She's all upset that people are all over her for it. She put up on her Facebook page, after being silent. Now, isn't that ironic? I would like to speak. I've been called every name in the book and have received some very hateful and vulgar comments and messages. I would like to say that as a female, I do not and have never promoted violence to women. I do not support abuse or the degradation of women. My controversial photo was taken by request by the family and was in no way meant to promote abuse. This photo was taken with humor in mind and was meant as a comical Christmas photo. I personally know this family and have known them for many years. They are not abusive to their children in any shape or form. Also, I would like to add that no one was harmed during the process. I'm glad that she has to add that. By the way, nobody was hurt by this. So everyone, have a very Merry Christmas and may God bless you and yours. She, as the time of this posting, had gotten 12,909 comments on that. I imagine a lot of them were a little rough as well. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala in for Patty on 720 WGN.
Hannah Montana.
With you on Radio 720 WGN, filling in for Patty for a few more minutes. Nick DiGilio is on the way. I believe he's got a band live in studio tonight. You can follow me on Facebook. Go to Matt Bubala. No, go to Facebook.com. The Matt Bubala Show is there. Give it a like and follow along there as well. We'd love to have you on board. I'm filling in for Ro Khan this Wednesday and for Mr. Cochran 3 days next week. So I'll get to hear you in some other hours of the day as well. Or you'll get to hear me, I guess, is what I should be saying. A texter wrote, Matt, and what if it is? So we were talking about the Christmas card photo that a family sent out. The mom and the two daughters are sitting down in front. And it's a beautiful setting. It's like on a Christmas tree farm. There's Christmas trees in the background. It seems nice. They're all dressed up really nice. They look like a very handsome family. But the mom and the two daughters have green duct tape over their mouth. And they have Christmas lights wrapped around their wrists. And the dad is kneeling in the background with a chalkboard that says peace on earth. And the little son, about 4 years old, 5 years old, has a thumbs up like, yeah, we finally shut them up. And ha ha ha, isn't that funny? And some people are upset, and some people are upset at people for being upset. 224 says, Matt, and what if it had been reversed? What if the man had the duct tape on? Then I think it's hilarious. Honest to goodness, I know that's hypocritical of me, but men are not silenced by women in general. Men are not abused by women in general. That's the difference. That's why things are, you know, one way and not the other. We, as white people, get upset that there's a Negro college fund. Where's the white college fund? The white college fund's the last 200 years of America. That's where it is. I mean, that's why these things happen. And so if the guys are duct tape and the women are like peace on earth, I would laugh at that. I think that's pretty funny and clever because I'm not worried about men getting abused or men doing this. I know it does happen, but it's very rare. It's on a small scale. So I think then you get away with it. Then it's kind of humor. Then you're reversing the norm. That makes it comedic. Then I'm okay with it. Speaking of families and parenting, there's a lot of concern about the millennials. Jasmine, actually, you would be a millennial, wouldn't you, dear Jasmine?
Yep.
Okay. So, mom and dad, do they overprotect you? Like, if something goes wrong, would they come talk to your boss for you, or would they protect you at all costs from everything?
Oh, no. I've been told to talk always. Say
speak up
how
for yourself.
You feel.
Do what you do. And yeah. You're out on your own. You're working your job, and that's your problem, and you got to figure it out.
Right.
That's the way it should be. So here's maybe the first, I mean, we're entering this realm. Esmeralda, are you technically a millennial?
I think I technically am.
Technically you
and
are.
I wouldn't consider myself.
You're not walking around telling people that, though.
No.
Okay. So there's a lot of concern, as we know, about millennials, and will they be able to work in the workplace, and are they going to not have social skills because of all the texting they've done their whole lives? Are the helicopter parents ruining them because they never have experienced failure and they don't know how to play well with others, or they don't know how to do anything on their own? Different things like that. Maybe this is our tipping point. Maybe this is where some parent has defended a child so much, cannot see the light, that you finally say, wow. If this is the future of what we're turning out, parents like this, kids like this, we need to make a change. The Tribune reported today about a LaGrange man who was charged with running a meth lab. Daniel Kowalski, who was photographed, he was arrested in, I think, 2013 and 2014. He was photographed by authorities wearing a shirt for Los Pollos Hermanos, which was the chicken place in Breaking Bad, a show famous about the making of meth. He was photographed by authorities wearing a shirt that references the show Breaking Bad. He pleaded guilty Friday to two drug possession charges, one a felony. Cook County judge sentenced Kowalski to 2 years of probation and 30 hours of community service. In February of 2014, he was charged with two counts of possession of a controlled substance, possession of methamphetamine manufacturing materials, and possession of materials needed to produce methamphetamine, according to the Cook County Sheriff's Office. Police had acted on a tip that meth was being produced at Kowalski's home in the 1000 block of 61st Street in unincorporated Cook County near LaGrange. The drug production charges were dropped in that case, and Kowalski pleaded guilty to possessing 6.95 grams of a psychedelic drug commonly called DMT. He was on electronic home monitoring from a July 2013 arrest in which police had allegedly found meth-making materials the first time during a building check by officers who also observed marijuana in the home when Kowalski opened the door. For that case, he pleaded guilty to possessing 10 to 30 grams of marijuana. Last year, police said officers found glass beakers, burners, chemicals, and instructional materials for making controlled substances inside the home. In the mugshot taken after the 2014 arrest, he's wearing the Breaking Bad t-shirt. He has a prior conviction for misdemeanor resisting arrest. He's going to get credit for 355 days of time served while in police custody. So, in general, if your kid gets caught with all of this stuff, possession of methamphetamine, manufacturing materials, possession of materials needed to produce methamphetamine, you know, that looks bad, right? I mean, you're kind of like, son, you need help. What can we do for you? We gotta get this fixed. Pleaded guilty to possessing 10 to 30 grams of marijuana. All of this stuff is not good. He's wearing the Breaking Bad t-shirt. So his mom is not saying, my son did wrong. He needs to get help. I want to help him change his ways. His mom, Jan Kowalski, said last week that her son wasn't manufacturing drugs when police found the suspicious equipment during a 2014 arrest. She said he was making wine. He had winemaking equipment, she said. She described her son as being a special education student when he was younger and said he had used the equipment to make two batches of wine. And she wasn't sure how police could mistake the carboys and pipettes used in winemaking for the beakers and other materials used in a meth lab. Last year, police said officers found glass beakers, burners, and chemicals and instructional materials for making controlled substances inside the home. But this is a scary thing that maybe this is where we're headed as parents. Maybe all the helicopter parenting and participation medals and everything else means that when our kids get caught making meth, we're going to say, no, they're making wine. How could you make that mistake, officer?
I don't think that's helicopter parenting. That's happened through the years where parents just don't want to accept that their kids are criminals. They're like, no, they wouldn't do that. They're good kids. He's a good boy. She's good. She never does anything like that. They're just being pretty much ignorant to the fact that their kids are bad little kids.
All right, now that's interesting because I wonder if you're right about that. Have parents been oblivious in the past, or in the past, would a family want to cover up what was going on, but then they would raise all hell behind closed doors with that kid? Do you think this is common? And you know what's funny is in the last year, because I was interviewing somebody, James Dean has been dead now. What was it? I think this year was like the 60th anniversary or something like that of his death. And so I was interviewing somebody about it on the weekend. So I actually watched, because I'd never seen a James Dean movie, I watched Rebel Without a Cause. And in that, it's kind of a situation like this where they keep moving town to town. The parents are real rich and they never discipline him for anything. They want to be his friend. They want to make good. When he gets in trouble, they just get him out of it. His dad in the movie is Thurston Howell III from Gilligan's Island, and he sort of is playing the same type of character, but he's just real soft on him. When he gets in trouble at school, they'll move, we'll do something, we'll protect you. They never discipline him. They never give him any guidance. It's funny how much that movie could relate to how we are a little bit now. But Esmeralda, you would say this isn't that different from a parent who just willfully will not admit that her kid could be involved in bad things.
I think so. I've seen that a lot. You watch a lot of times, you'll watch the news and there'll be shootings and things and be like, oh no, my son would never do that. They're a good boy. They don't do that, this and that. And it's like, no, your kid shot somebody. Sorry. You may not want to see that, but, you know. I think that happens a lot because they don't want, you know, they just don't want to believe it.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. To me, it's a concern. I'm worried that this is how we're all turning, that we're protecting our kids no matter what. I mean, I've heard stories. Amy Guth was telling me that she's had people working for her before at jobs that she's promoted, millennials, and then the parents have called to renegotiate the salary.
I mean, that's just crazy.
That is crazy. When John Williams talked about his son Grant going off to college, I remember John saying that before the kids start school, they're going to orientation, the parents all come, they take them all around the campus all day long, show them everything, this and that. And then they get into an auditorium and say, okay, parents, you're going to go over here to this area where we've got cookies and refreshments for you. You're going to hang out while your children go off into this other room and register for their classes. And John said there were several people, or many people, out of the parents who freaked out. Like, what do you mean the kids are going to go register for classes? Like, well, they're going to register for the classes. No, we have to go with them. And like, no, the parents don't go with. The kids go do that. And these parents were apoplectic that they don't know what to do. They don't know. I have to be there for that. I have to help, you know, do that with them. And suddenly they had to become adults.
Man, my parents left midway because they got hungry. They left like mid orientation. Someone gave me a note. They're like, your parents left. And I was like, what? All right.
So you just had to do it. They came back though, right?
I mean, they came back to pick me up. It was like one of those weekend things. But they left midway. I was like, all right, thanks. See you later then, I guess.
See, most kids would be thrilled.
You I mean, it was fine, but I'm like, that? I thought you were supposed to stay and do like all the parent things. They were just like, no, we got hungry.
Too funny. Where did you go to school?
DePaul.
Oh, so you were just right here.
Yeah,
it's not
here,
like you were
still,
far away.
But still, it was like,
hey,
really?
Hey,
you're
hey,
leaving?
Now,
okay.
Too.
I'm not saying anything bad about DePaul
okay.
at all, Jasmine. I love
okay.
DePaul. If my son Jack ended up at DePaul, I'd be thrilled, except for the tuition.
It was just fun. They just left. They were like, no, we got hungry.
Well, they can see you at any second of any day. They're not far away. That's all I'm saying is.
They're the opposite of those parents freaking out that they can't see their kids.
So I think what you're saying is that if you ever get arrested for making meth in the interview, they'll go, yeah, I could see that. She probably was making meth. She had all the stuff and they caught her. So
well,
yeah,
because my
I imagine she was making meth.
My parents are, they understand that people can do bad things. They're not going to, just because I'm their kid, they're just going to be like, no, she can't do anything bad.
But I think, you know, it's that, but it also reflects badly on you. I mean, this
oh,
mom,
well,
you know, if she admits, yeah,
it.
He's a screw up and I don't know where I went wrong, then, you know, it's like, well, you
but
went
then,
wrong somewhere.
You know, that also can just be outside things, too.
Yes,
you could be a wonderful
can.
Parent and still pop yeah. out a bad egg, as they say.
Oh, that's very sad. But I guess true. I wonder, though. No. I don't wonder. We wonder too much about this because we fret about, you know, we got four kids at home and we're fretting all the time over what kind of damage we're doing to them in the long term, because we undoubtedly are. And we wonder what things they'll be on a couch talking about someday that we did. And we hope that, you know, the four kids will just get together and laugh about us and not really be, you know, as we all laugh about our parents and certain things that they used to do, right? Hopefully our kids will just do that and not actually be speaking to a psychologist about how we've scarred them for life for certain things. I, you know, you don't know how that's going to turn out. But there's little fights you have every day that we look at each other thinking, wow. And we just had this discussion yesterday saying that, you know, we're not appreciating enough the time that we have with them, that they're at these ages now, they're 10 and 14, and soon that's going to be gone. And we're getting on them so much about things, which I do think is important. That you're not soft and just enjoying the time and letting them get away with whatever. We are hard on them about grades and appearance and courtesy and things like that. But you also waste a lot of time screaming about the clothes that they seem to just disappear out of instead of taking off and throwing in a laundry basket or things like that. And you worry about how much time are you wasting and how much are you doing well. 773 texts, affluenza is real. We've been hearing this word affluenza a lot the last couple of days because this kid who was arrested for something. And his defense was he didn't understand what was right and wrong because he had such an affluent upbringing, has now escaped and is on the run with his mom.
How did they not find them? Come on, FBI.
Well, they're affluent. They have ways and resources, apparently. I don't know. I don't know. 630 says, read Death by Suburb. It summarizes the past 10 minutes. Well, I don't need to read it then. But I would. I would. That sounds interesting. And 847 says, Esmeralda is right on the money. Whatever. Whatever, Esmeralda. I don't know. I think we as parents have gotten too protective, have gotten too soft. Everybody I talk to about that, I do this Good Parenting radio show, and all the experts, a lot of them, worry very much that we overprotect, overschedule, over kids don't play. There's a huge worry that kids will not know how to interact with it when they're adults, not only because of the texting and the lack of eye contact and speaking to each other, but because everything they do is so organized now that kids don't meet out in the driveway and go down to the end of the block to a park or whatever and play things, that it's soccer or hockey or baseball or football or gymnastics or dance, that it's a class with an instructor and clear rules, that the kids are never actually working together and defining the rules. So we'll see. Nick DiGilio's up next on 720 WGN. All right, Matt Babal here with you for Patty Vasquez on 720 WGN. I'll be back in for Ro Khan on Wednesday. And then for Mr. Cochran a few days next week, 312-981-7200 is the number. And Facebook.com/Matt Babal Show. You can give us a like there and follow along as well. Thank you very much for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you, Esmeralda, for playing along with me. I do appreciate it, as always. And Jasmine for producing. And Craig Collins for jumping in and chatting Star Wars with us.